episode 566 of the Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. I'm not sure about these new Bluetooth headphones. Something keeps telling me to go to Ultron.
Yes. Yes. Please listen to what you're being told. Anyway, we have some material here left for this week because, yes, as I mentioned a little while ago in the last couple episodes, 26 episodes. Even when we try and compress everything into two episodes, there's just no way. There's too much. Too much. What we covered last week, last episode, was all of the material that was between the above average 8 and the exceptional 9 this week. We had the top three episodes and then everything that fell beneath that. And we just started getting into the episodes that were at an above average 8. And what we're going to really get into here in this episode is everything that fell between 7 and 8. So stuff that was not dead average, like the bottom three shows were, but didn't quite make it above average in terms of the sentiment, if that makes at all any sense. And at this point, you guys should know how we score episodes. So yes, it should make sense. That means we can get right into the disclaimer, right, Edmund?
Absolutely. As we speed through or linger on these episodes, there's just about anything we might say about them, which means that, yes, if you haven't seen them, you will be spoiled. But we, as always, try and give you a week or so to try and keep up. We know it's hard, but we manage somehow. You really should, too.
That's right. That's right. And we're going to go ahead and start with a few quick ones here before we delve into things of a little bit more substance, shall we say, or at least more opinions. And that is The Vampire Diaries, Season 6, Episode 19, Because. Damon struggles with whether to tell Elena about the cure and talks to her about what life would be like if they weren't vampires. Meanwhile, Bonnie discovers Damon betrayed her trust, and Enzo learns the truth about the day he was turned into a vampire. I gave this an 8 because it is very clear at this point that if you didn't know it already from Nina Dobrev letting everybody know on Instagram, yeah, there's only a few episodes left with her on the show because they are certainly setting something up for her to leave. And as I put on my note here, lots of emotional manipulation and beheadings? Fun! And yes, I was even talking about The Vampire Diaries, not this next show. Vikings, Season 3, Episode 10, The Dead. I sense a theme here. Ragnar is very... that was my comment. Oh. It's getting late. In the season 3 finale, Viking troops make one more daring effort to take Paris, and Ragnar requests the favor of Bjorn, one that could alter the course of Viking history. Yes, indeed. And my comment here essentially was, as I started to say, Ragnar is very clever, but interesting how they pretty much didn't even try to wrap up the major plot threads. Yes, this is one of those instances where you have a show that finally knows just how popular it is.
Yeah.
And they realize that, yeah, the chances we're not going to have another season are pretty low, so we might as well just start telling a longer narrative. And yeah, there's a lot that they left undone in the in this finale. However, Ragnar's little pretend, I want to die a consecrated Christian. Please, please bring me into your nice cathedral.
Ah, that didn't work too well, did it? For the cathedral, that is.
No, no, because of course they pretended he was dead. And they were more than happy to have a Christian funeral to consecrate this pagan. Yeah, sorry, Emperor Charles, didn't work out too well. Hence the historical sacking of Paris. No one who knows history, particularly this particular part of history, was surprised that this is how the season was going to end. However, I didn't know that Ragnar Lothbrok knew about the Trojan horse. Nor that his coffin should be, said Trojan Horse, but it worked out well.
Yeah, well, you know, that was that secret monk they had squirreled away in the storeroom.
Well, that was season 2 and 3, and Ethelstan is also dead.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's funny, you know, you were, I don't know if you realized or not, but yes, they did have their own secret priest. Anyway, next, Edmund, if you don't mind.
Certainly. This would be Salem, Season 2, Episode 4, Book of Shadows. Anne explores her supernatural side, while Mary receives a chilling warning.
Mm-hmm. And this one came in also at an 8, above average. But, Edmund, what were your thoughts on this one in particular?
Well, with this, starting to explore just what being a witch means for Anne, and so to a certain extent, still fleshing out the new dynamic between the various players. In addition to the introduction of Lucy Lawless as the new, big bad witch, I'm rather intrigued with the way this is all panning out as the witch war that they've been pushing. Certainly the whole dynamic between Mary and Anne and now dear burnt up Missy. It's definitely some intriguing conflict happening. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I make no bones about the fact that I really was curious where Anne was going to go after everything that happened in the season finale, and it seemed like they were taking a little while to get there. Not anymore.
No.
But this is a weird thing. I understand they have 13 episodes and all of that, but isn't it just strange that we're at episode 4 and it seems like, not unlike some of these other shows, that it's just taking a little while?
Mm-hmm.
That said, it is such a guilty pleasure show. It probably not a guilty pleasure, but a guiltier pleasure. I don't know what, but yeah. Anyway, one of the thoughts that came to my mind was that I think John Alden needs to go talk to Dean Winchester about, you know, witches, curses.
Yes.
They're having equal problems. And this is where, if we want to play, a little bit of compare contrast.
Yes.
Where did Supernatural go wrong this season? This is how you depict witches, if you're going to make them terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Terrifying and alluring is that mix that they've got going.
Supernatural has Rowena.
Yeah,
neither alluring and not terrifying in the way they were hoping.
No, terrifying to any possibility of the plot moving forward, but.
Yes, yes.
We'll be getting to that.
Yes, but no. But this is the point that I was making, is that it's not really that the material is not altogether different between the two shows, if you really dig down into it.
Mm-hmm.
But the treatment of it has been dramatically different, and that's the key. Salem, yes, it's a bit of a, you know, over-the-top show, to say the least, but it's consistent. And they really do. When they want to be scary, they are terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
When they want to, like, really make you understand how the witches could get under your skin, they manage to do that. So the stated premise of the show has been 100% maintained and met. And that's where other shows, maybe a longer in the tooth, like Supernatural, they've been struggling, because what that title has meant in previous seasons has not been met in terms of the level of quality and expectation. But Salem definitely is one of those shows that it's the kind of show that I really wish I could tell everybody to watch. But there are some people that really, no, please don't watch this, because I don't want you to like wonder what I'm thinking by telling you to watch this show.
Yes, exactly.
A show that I don't have to worry about that with is The Returned, season 1, episode 8, Claire. Claire's secret is revealed. Lena returns home. Police arrest the suspected killer, who makes a full confession. Victor goes to extreme lengths to protect Julie. Camille learns the horrifying consequences of her attempt to help. Once again, Edmund, we're going to play the game. Does this sound familiar?
Yes.
Okay. And then you probably understand why my first reaction was, what's with the kid? Victor's terrifying. What is with this kid?
Yes, he is.
Yes. And yes, nice exploration of the consequences of happy little white lies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yes, I am curious because, of course, the French Le Revenant was 8 episodes. We are now at episode 8 of The Returned. So was this where the first season of Le Revenant ended? Or are they kind of...
I think they're stretching.
Stretching the final couple episodes out a bit.
Yeah, because there's other stuff that's...
Yes,
okay. That will be happening. So.
Yes. All right, if you don't mind taking the next one, please.
Certainly. This is Mad Men, Season 7, Episode 11, Time and Life. Don comes up with a big idea. Roger asks Joan for help with a clerical error. Peggy has a hard time with casting for a commercial.
Yeah. So this one came in at an average of 7.88. For the most part, most of us thought that this was a much better episode than we've seen since the show came back from its hiatus. Bunstum, he still gave this an average thing. He said, okay, but he did give it this much. Well-paced, good character beats. Yes, that's what made the difference for this episode for me as well. However, he goes on to say, it still seems like the show is trying to go out with a whimper instead of a bang. I kind of see where he's coming from, but I'm wondering if he's weighing in more. This is more because he hasn't had a chance to weigh in on the other episodes versus just this one episode, because I don't feel like that's true of this episode. Mm-hmm. But overall, I am concerned. How are they going to wrap this up?
Yes,
Gary goes on to say that this felt like the show recapturing some of its old energy. Did Don actually smile? And I do acknowledge that this is the first time, the first episode that really seemed to focus entirely on the idea that the story is coming to a close. But what do you think, Edmund?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, certainly the reason why it's a bit higher in the rankings is because this is the first time I've actually given it an above average. Because for me, this was the first episode that really felt like it was putting the focus back where it should be on the primary characters. I was realizing a lot of my objections to some of the previous episodes was precisely this what felt like this apparent need to rotate through some of the past characters and in ways that just felt forced and alien to the show. And this was the show concentrating on its core characters and core relationships, and it just made all the difference for me.
Mm. Now, where do you think this is all going?
I mean, I am feeling more and more. Whatever happened last year, that mini half season or whatever it was. But certainly since they came back this time, that it did seem to be moving more towards this idea of Don being someone sort of trapped in stasis, and not able to change and have all these things fall away around him. And if that is in fact the case, I'm going to be disappointed, because at the beginning of the show, this whole concept of this man who was such a chameleon, going through the 60s, having found his one sense of style that he thought would work, and then having it not work for him at the end of the decade, is a lot less interesting than the idea of someone who's that much of a chameleon actually going through the 60s and making some of those oddball changes. May not make that much sense from the standpoint of a further 20 or 30 years, but made sense within the time. But apparently that's certainly not where we're going. But I still proclaim my right to feel a little bit disappointed about that.
Fair enough. I mean, what I see happening here is along the lines of, I was not expecting this episode to turn out to have a semi-happy ending for the five execs, because I felt like this would be a natural way to set up them all having to go their separate ways and find a new meaning beyond the Sterling Cooper family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like they still may. I think that it would really play into... not unlike where maybe you thought that it might have gone if they continued to play out the time jumps more. But one of the big things that people really obviously feel these days is that since the economy is driven a lot by mergers and acquisitions, especially now, is that a lot of people know that feeling of that sense of family of their own company getting acquired. And then even if you're all still around, the family still breaks up.
Yes, of course.
Right? So I would find it interesting if it wasn't so much that that they all went their separate ways to other companies or other things, and some of them just didn't. Like, I could see that falling into Gary's theory about Don. But I think it would be almost thematically and like socially aware for them to go in this direction where, no, these five people and that represent the last kind of gasp of the old Sterling Cooper, you know, along with a few maybe other characters, but they're already kind of moving in their own direction. But these characters in particular that we've been following all this time, that they get absorbed into something else. And this It's like, no, they're still doing the job, but they're not who. But now they're just part of a different machine. They don't run it anymore. They're just like, it would be very existentially interesting to go that direction.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that was part of what I liked as well about there's been this that sense of sort of name checking things from the run of the show, and with this one, all of that maneuvering and trying to spin it back in their direction, which was certainly playing off of the shenanigans from earlier seasons, but then to have them go through all that, but to have it come out at the other end of saying, no, guys, settle down, this really is a good thing, but at the same time that basically being their old nemesis from McCann, who's spinning that out for them, and just getting that definite sense of, you know, yes, okay, so yeah, you're supposed to think it's a good thing, but yeah, that shot of all of them around the table, they're still looking pretty nervous. So it's, you know, yeah, they've been through this enough to where they know that, you know, yes, just because on paper it looks good, that doesn't mean it's not going to be the horrible thing you thought it was.
Yeah, but I do think that it's like winning. You've won, but it's someone else who's decided that you've won.
Yeah.
Like, they're not the ones who are deciding that they are the winners, or that it's basically the conquerors are telling you that it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're telling you you've won, but that it's like, but what's important to Don and to Roger and all the, it's not whether or not they turn out okay in the end. It's that they maintain control of their destiny, and they're being told they won, which is in a sense, sign this piece of paper. Mm-hmm. This is your surrender.
Yes.
And that's the thing that's like really, that's where I find it's like, yes, if that's kind of where they're going with this, I get it. Because then the next three episodes are about them realizing what this means. And some of them, like, I could see Roger basically being like, buy me out.
Yeah.
I retire. I could see, you know, Joan feeling like, I gained the respect of the people in this room, but now she already has said like, but so I won, but what did I win? I didn't win anything. Now I've got to prove myself with somebody else. I could see Pete basically being exactly the same person. I mean, that would be perfect way for him to end.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where I feel like, okay, Gary, you may still be right about Don, because I can see Don being like, I fought for how long to be at the top of the game and to be in control, and now I just have to be a drone?
Yeah.
With nothing, because he's lost everything along the way? So it really could get at the core of this guy who has no identity, and at the end of the day, that's where he ends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I can see why this is a big episode. This is a great episode. I still also understand Bronstum's feeling like it's not the kind of drama, the high drama that we were kind of led to believe would be the big culmination of this. Certainly not the promotion.
No.
Anyway, any other last thoughts on Mad Men? Well, we're it's okay. You kind of tripped me off on a tangent there.
No, but other than it just occurred to me, in the vein of my ongoing criticisms, it's like, you know, yes, the end of an era, but which era did you think you were ending? But...
Yeah, exactly right. All right. Well, a show that is still going on and that we've given a little bit of a hard time to. The next one here, Supernatural Season 10, Episode 19, The Werther Project. Sam searches for a magical box built by a former men of letters that should be former man of letters, right? Anyway, yeah. That may be able to cure Dean of the Mark of Cain, but the box contains a deadly alarm system that puts the brothers' lives in danger. And this got a score of 7.67, which is pretty darn good for this season.
Mm-hmm.
Bronstum only gave it a 7, but he said surprisingly strong. Creepy opening, interesting monster, fills in the mythology, and moves the story along. Yes, and that's exactly it. That's something that we haven't seen in a while. And I said an episode with Rowena that actually didn't suck. Imagine that.
Well, yeah, but that's because she was sort of on the sidelines for most of it.
Yes, and it technically wasn't her.
Yes.
Hey, look, the actress actually can do something that isn't entirely irritating.
Yes, imagine that.
Yes, but yeah, this felt like classic Supernatural, finally. How about you, Edmund? What were your thoughts on this one?
Pretty much along the same lines. I mean, I liked the mix they had with having it be a Men of Letters episode, but at the same time turning that into a sort of, you know, monster or puzzle of the week for them to work out. We haven't seen that sort of integration done well in quite some time.
Yep, I would agree. Let's see here. You can take the next one.
Certainly. This was Elementary... excuse me. Elementary Season 3, Episode 21, Under My Skin. Two New York City paramedics are killed during a kidnapping. Holmes and Watson join the manhunt to find the murderer and the woman he abducted. Meanwhile, Sherlock learns some important information about his recovery sponsor that strains their relationship. Yes, apparently I was the only one who reviewed this. Came in at a 7.5. Which is where this show has been pretty much cruising along at. And for similar reasons, now that they've sort of settled back into the sort of new slightly revamped but not really Holmes and Watson relationship, it's been chugging along with cases that are reasonably intricate. They could be more intricate, but that's been one of the issues all along. Mixing in some of the personal background stuff with the stuff going on with his sponsor that still isn't hitting it out of the park, but is doing stuff better than average. Hence the 7.5.
There you go. All right. We have here Dig, Season 1, Episode 8, Sisters of Dinah. Lynn suspects that there may be a mole at the consulate. Margrove and Peter both head to a convent, but they have different goals, and Debbie returns to the compound seeking vengeance.
Yes.
And this one came in at a 7.5. Here's the sum of my comments. Two episodes left and the writers still barely connect events to the stated premise. Yes. Thanks, Tim Kring.
Yep. Well, that seems to echo various comments I had earlier in the run. So, yes.
But we're two episodes away.
I know.
How can we still not have the threads? Okay, whatever.
End of days is a messy business. It's all just fwa, 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 and then it all comes together in the end. Just kind of like a souffle.
And as people get that reference, send in your emails. Anyway, Grimm, Season 4, Episode 19, Iron Hans. Nick and Hank investigate homicide, but when they discover what they discover, which they discover is connected to an age-old Vezin rite of passage. Juliet makes a surprising new ally. Nick finds a reason for hope in an unexpected person, and Captain Renard continues to battle a darkness within. Yes, and this was interesting because it had a big moment at the end where Juliet basically torches Nick's entire grimoire, if you will, which was an unexpected turn of events, to say the least. And that's a huge deal. And I think that Nick and crew getting back in with Adelind, as those who watch the show will understand why that's a huge deal. I like the fact that their dynamic is going where it's going. I just really don't like the fact that there's so much retread. And that's why I didn't give it more than a 7.5. Next, we have the original Season 2, Episode 20, City Beneath the Sea. Dahlia reveals to Klaus some startling details about Baby Hope and makes him an enticing proposition. Meanwhile, Elijah and Freya come up with opposing ideas on how to handle Dahlia's looming deadline. Vincent approaches Davina with an intriguing offer, and Haley makes a difficult decision about her and Hope's future. And I give this a 7.5. A little bit lower than what has typically been the case for the originals, but some of this backstory was just not grabbing me as well as I had hoped it would. If you don't mind taking the next one, Edmund.
Certainly. This is Turn, Season 2, Episode 4, Men of Blood. Abe tries to recruit a new agent in New York. Caleb races Rogers as they hunt down intelligence from London. Andre's history is exposed. Yes, there's a reason he has that chip on his shoulder. And yes, it's the one you probably thought. But
yes. Now, I noticed, you didn't have a chance to catch up on this one, Edmund?
I'm sorry. I actually did. Yes, I would keep us in accord. I thought I had put in my 7.5, so.
Okay, I'm just going to do that right now.
Yeah.
Just so that it's kept in the log anyway. Yes, so this came in at an average of 7.5. My main comment was that there was some excitement here and there, especially Abe talking with the potential ally.
Yes.
But still felt like a lot of this was just transitional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, which, you know, seems to be our ongoing theme. You know, yes, four episodes in, and they're still sort of trying to set up the new status quo, which is a little bit strange, especially given the fact we've always been going on and on over the years about, yes, you can do these nice shorter seasons in cable where you can get to the story quicker.
Yes, exactly. And we still have these transitional episodes. What can you do?
Yeah.
Next one is Orphan Black, Season 3, Episode 2, Transitory Sacrifices of Crisis. Okay. Kester pursues the Lita clones for original tissue samples. Meanwhile, Helena, who is pregnant and imprisoned, is examined by a mysterious villain. And this one came in at an average of 7.33. Bronstom's comment here is Kester-centric, which is good. Important to get a handle on the new baddies. Does Allison forget what show she's in? Weeds finished a while ago. Meanwhile, I'm sitting back saying, a bit easier to follow compared to the premiere, but the Kester clones aren't really as compelling to me as the Clone Club is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's my problem this season already.
Yeah, I mean, when they seem to be going with the concept of, you know, okay... Yes, it's now been established that, yeah, even among clones, as among young actors, you know, yes, Tatiana Maslany, you know, stands alone, since the new clones seem to be distinguished more by which ones are more mentally stable than the others. So, and, which admittedly is a somewhat easier acting demand than create all these different characters, but yeah, certainly not quite as compelling as the original Clone Club.
No, And I gotta say, I don't know that I don't off the top of my head have it right in front of me the name of the actor that does the male clones, but I don't have the sense yet. It hasn't been shown to me yet that he has the range that Tatiana Maslany has.
Yeah,
and this has been kind of my concern as soon as the Kester clones were revealed. Is that could anybody? There's not a lot of people that could pull off what she does.
No.
We've seen a million times how it hasn't worked when they've even tried to have two versions of a character if the actor or actress cannot pull it off. Mm-hmm. So this was always going to be their biggest problem. And sure enough, that's the problem. The actor just does not grab you.
Yeah.
And I understand that the actor is that the characters for the Kester clones are all in some fashion or another kind of military in concept. So there is a certain lack of distinction that's built into that, but then the characters need to be more energetic,
mm-hmm.
and they're just not.
I mean, it's odd that there's sort of that military bearing, and at the same time, this sort of James Dean rebel with a chip on his shoulder attitude as well, running through them, and certainly at this point, introducing this whole other clone line where, you know, okay, you're doing the actor a favor and in introducing differentiations that aren't as varied and interesting, but the problem is then, yes, you're devoting a whole bunch of your show to a part that's to something that's not as varied and interesting as the remarkable thing that made it take off in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. I'm also beginning to get slightly worried that Orphan Black was a really good one or two season show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could be proven wrong, but I mean, we've only seen two episodes this season, so it's not like they're long seasons. What are they, like 10 episodes long? So it's not like it's a huge representation so far of what the season could be.
Mm-hmm.
But I was already starting to get concerned last season.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was last season, and then they introduced enough of the Kester program to get a sense coming out of last season. But the sense for me has been that as good as they've been at the characterizations, and obviously, you know, having a fabulous time playing around with having Tatiana Maslany be able to create as many different incarnations as apparently you can throw at her, but what hasn't really held up is the whole machinations and conspiracy side of things, with Dyad and now this layer above Dyad and the competing military Kester project, unfortunately it appears that this group of producers and writers room anyways is not quite as good at making those details fun and funky, and you know, not that it has to be Le Carre great. I mean, we'll take MI5/Spooks level of conspiracy, but yeah, that is the one part that I do fear will be its downfall in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing I don't want to see happen, and I really am afraid that its popularity is going to give them the reason to do this, which is letting it get to the point where all that plays out.
Yeah.
Like, if you can see it coming, either adjust or plan for an earlier ending. Don't just play right into all these issues that are plain for everybody to see at this stage of the game. Anyway. And finally, we have, and it's odd, this always seems to show up towards the end. Anyway, iZombie, Season 1, Episode 7, Maternity Live. A pregnant woman is murdered, but her baby survives. After Liv consumes the victim's brain, a fierce maternal instinct kicks in. Meanwhile, Major makes a shocking discovery. And this came in at a 7.33. Bronze Thumb's comment here is, I don't care much about the mysteries, but the world building is exciting me for a big season finale. On the other hand, I'm starting to say, I'm starting to accept the fact that the show is just leaning on that episodic format.
Yes.
Clearly, we have slightly different opinions, but Edmund, where do you lie on this?
Well, I would say for me, I mean, that I'm a little more excited for the world building, but I'm glad that as far as the episodic stuff goes, they have settled into a good middle ground where I'm not cringing at the cases.
Yeah, I'm just feeling like no matter what else may be going on here, it's obvious that they're putting a lot of time and effort into just letting the audience enjoy Liv doing all these different versions of the character.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, we just got done talking about not many actresses can do what Tatjana Maslany does. Mm-hmm. Well, this is one way to avoid that whole problem.
Yes.
By letting her be the same character, just slightly
tinged, yes.
Yes, exactly. And it works fine. It's fun to watch. I don't have a problem. She's easy on the eyes. I like the actress. She's from New Zealand, so not technically another Australian, but close. But yeah, I mean, it just, this show, it has a larger mythology behind it. They're slowly building it up. I just feel like they're playing it safe this first season, maybe a little bit. That's the sense I'm getting here. But we'll see. All right. Any other thoughts on iZombie?
No, well, it's just that comment you were making about them maybe playing it a little bit safe compared to the source material. I was realizing that we may have reached that point where because they're on the CW, and precisely because shows like Arrow and Flash kind of paved the way by having their own sort of voice and vision, even if people didn't agree with it necessarily at the time, but coming out with it very strong, and with iZombie, I wouldn't put it on the quality level of person of interest, but I almost see it they might be doing a similar thing that POI did of trying to set up the episodic and procedural elements while they introduce all the other stuff in the background, and then they can start pulling more on that world that they've built as it goes along.
Yeah, I can see that happening, and quite frankly, I mean, the CW mid-season stuff has such a wide variety. We've had everything from Star-Crossed to The Messengers to iZombie to The 100.
Yes. Yeah, that's pretty much the gamut right there.
I definitely feel like iZombie is more on the 100 side of things than the Star-Crossed side of things. So it may not be as dark and in-depth in terms of the world building, but at the same time, I don't know that that's what they're trying to go for with this show. And that's okay. I think, like you said, they're doing a slow burn maybe on the big implications and just letting people get to know the characters for a while. Well, Edmund, any last thoughts then on this week as a whole? I think this is actually the most packed week that we have. I think it actually starts to taper off slightly next week.
Okay.
We can only hope, right?
That's good. Yes.
Because this was nuts. I didn't even realize until I finally stopped playing stuff on my DVR and Hulu and everything else and sat down and said, and how many did we cover? Holy cow. Yeah, next week is only 24. That still somehow feels like a break.
Yes. Yes, but I will still be slightly mourning since that reduction is partially because the Americans isn't on there next week. Oh well.
Yes, but one thing that I find very interesting here is that some of those shows are finales or penultimate episodes at the very least. We're definitely getting to the end of the season, and instead of it being the end of May that it's happening at the beginning of May.
Yes, that is strange.
Yes. So there's going to be like a few weeks. We're going to have these packed weeks, like 2 dozen plus episodes. And in just, you know, the space of the next month, it's going to go from that to a trickle. They're still working this whole year-round thing.
Yeah, well, you know, they need to leave a little bit of downtime for us to discover those other streaming options.
I suppose so. It's always nice of them to leave June relatively untouched so that we have a little bit of time to do our wrap-up, though.
Yes, of course.
It's the only time of the year that we can. But we're going to wrap up this episode in the meantime, so thank you everyone for listening this week, and we will be back, like I said, next week, 24 episodes of material to cover, and who knows what kind of news we're going to get into.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.